Welcome to radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to firehouse.com.
We are here with a group of firefighters, police officers, EMTs, paramedics, nurses, and their families to talk about firstresponders.com, the website devoted to the financial life of first responders. Excuse me, what's your name? Okay, Jim, tell me, what do you like best about firstresponders.com? Is it the credit card that tells everybody you're a first responder, or their competitive mortgage rates? Oh, it's the Responder Rewards Program. Exclusive discounts you and your family get from hundreds of retail outlets, from home improvement to electronics to clothing. Up to 40% off. Great. Is this your little doggy? Hey, buddy. Everybody seems to love the benefits of firstresponders.com. Right, everybody?
You speak your own language, we speak it too. That's because firstresponders.com was created by first responders. With benefits like great mortgage products, discounts at retailers, and the first responders credit card. It's not just a credit card, it's a badge. Firstresponders.com, giving back to the people who give.
Welcome to Through the Smoke on Firehouse.com. We're live in Baltimore at the 25th anniversary of Firehouse Expo. It's a pleasure to be here. 25 years of Firehouse Expo. I remember the first one where we, the guests were obviously instructors of the day, but I remember the fire flea market that is now in the exhibit hall on Sunday was actually out on the docks in what was to become the new Inner Harbor. It was quite interesting and certainly a lot of fun. And other than just 2 years, one in Philadelphia and one in St. Louis, I think, every other year it's been held in Baltimore. And it's always fun to come to Baltimore with the convention here. It's just a perfect match of great education, great training, and great social activities. Well, we got two guests on the show today that, and I don't do a Through the Smoke show, and we're passing our 40th show, and we'll have our 50th this year. But I don't do a show unless there's something to talk about. And sometimes our producers, Pete Matthews and the folks at Firehouse.com, do a show. Well, if I got nothing to talk about, I'm not going to do a show. We don't need to waste time and airspace and all that stuff. So when I climbed way down to the bottom of the barrel to figure out something to talk about this week, I thought, you know what? There are two guys out there, and I'm obviously kidding. There are two guys out there running blogs. And I remember when I first heard the word blog, I don't know what the hell blog was, and I'm still not exactly sure, but I think it's a website in which someone provides their commentary and information on a daily basis. I guess that's it. And I'm certainly no stranger to the Internet. My website, along with Gordon Graham, firefighterclosecalls.com, we don't do a blog. We provide firefighter safety and survivor-related information, as well as commentary through our newsletter, The Secret List. But I consider probably two of the best bloggers out there and two of the best websites out there to get good information and lots of opinion is Statter 911, www.statter, S-T-A-T-T-E-R 911. And there'll be a link right there at the bottom of your website, of your webpage while you listen to the show. You can click right there on Statter 911. And firegeezer.com, www.firegeezer.com. When I heard Dave Statter was doing a website, I kind of had a good idea of what he'd do. And it's turned out to be just a very popular website. And it's Dave Statter to a T. The opinion, the information, a little bit of cynicism. It makes for a great, great site to check out. But Fire Geezer, I thought, was like going to be at a nursing home. And I wasn't sure what it was. And I've followed that site as well. And both Bill Shum, who runs Fire Geezer, and Dave Statter, who runs Statter 911, are our guests today. Dave, welcome to the show.
Good to be here, Billy.
And Bill, same to you.
Thank you.
And so let's welcome them both to our show today. It's a lively audience. Fortunately, beer has been provided, so they'll get livelier as the class goes on.
How come we don't have
it? You get no beer. So we're going to talk about firefighters and blogs. You know, communications has changed so drastically in the world just in the last, I guess, 10, 15 years. Our website, firefighterclosecalls.com, is approaching our sixth year. And The Secret List, our newsletter, is about 10 or 11 years now. And I discovered that there's more than one thing you can search for on the Internet a couple of years ago. And I started searching for fire and rescue and other related stuff. And I'm just amazed. Every day the Internet is growing and instant information. And anything you need to know, it's there. Whether a young mom looking forward to having her first child, learning and searching, or someone who's dealing with a disease, learning and searching, or more fun stuff, looking for old movies you used to enjoy. I'm a big Little Rascals and Three Stooges fan, and they're all on there, those clips. And the Internet has given us so much access to information. Sometimes it's too much. I know, and you extend it to text messaging. I think 50 years from now, when you come to the 75th anniversary of Firehouse Expo, there'll be no speakers. We're just going to text each other all day long. That's how it's going to work. Because it's kind of, I mean, you see these kids, it's like their thumbs are on crack and shit. So I think that we're allowed to say that because this is not FCC regulated. So I think that communications are changing, but what also is positive is there's so much good information out there. And when it comes to information, no one is better than firefighters at passing information along, whether it's true or not. We certainly, the brotherhood, until you do something good or bad, and then the brothers and sisters take good care of you, we become pretty good or not so good at passing information around. And there are some websites and some blogs out there that have really disappointed me. And not that I'm anyone to judge, but I'm giving you my opinion. There are some sites that create some of their own information and make up their news as they go along. And it's really unfortunate because information out there, sometimes people take for being real. So the lesson there is if you read it on the Internet, it isn't necessarily so. And you got to check it out. But for the most part, the websites that are out there, firehouse.com, fireengineering.com, Fire Geezer, Statter 911, and so many others, and of course our own firefighterclosecalls.com, our goal really is to provide you with the facts and to provide you with good information so you can make decisions or you can learn. And we've looked around and studying and what's gone on with firefighters, not just from a firefighter safety and survival standpoint, but just fire news in general. The good things we do, the bad things we do. And the two sites, again, that we picked to talk with today are Statter 911, www.statter911, and firegeezer.com. Both Dave and Bill, Dave Statter and Bill Shum, are located in the Washington, D.C. area, and there's an extremely diverse group of fire service providers, fire departments, and firefighters in the D.C. area. So it makes for a real interesting view for them to report on and to comment on and share on. So let's start with Dave. Dave, tell us about you. Now, I knew you many years ago when I was the director of fire and rescue in Virginia in Loudoun. And we became friends there through your reporting and your work with us. But tell us about your background. Where did you get started? Where did your interest in fire rescue, as well as the media, because you have a full-time job in the media, which you can explain about as well. So just give us a little bit about yourself, Dave Statter.
Started right here in Baltimore. That's where I'm from, Baltimore City. And my last year of high school, I worked at a radio station at the Community College of Baltimore, Liberty Heights Avenue. And I was interested in the fire department since I was very young. And I said, well, let me do a story on the Baltimore City Fire Department. And I wrote along. I talked. Tom Burke was the chief then. This is 1972, probably. And I asked him if I could ride along. I'd done a number of stories with him, with a company. He sent me to Engine 6, the old firehouse, which is now the museum, on Gay Street. And the battalion chief then would later be the chief of the department, Peter O'Connor. And I rode along with them for a better part of a month and did a story for WBJC. And I was hooked. And I said, this is interesting. I really like this. It's what I always thought it would be.
So you were a news guy first?
Yeah, a little bit. Okay. It was my last year of high school. And
okay.
Wow. I went to work in radio and TV. And during the gas crisis, I guess, of 73, I was commuting to a radio station I was working at in La Plata, Maryland, and that wasn't working out too well. That was about an hour and 15 minutes each way, and trying to get gasoline during that time, going six days a week.
Having to pay 40 cents a gallon was ridiculous.
So, I know, it seems like it doesn't seem like much, but it was a lot then. But there were days you couldn't get gasoline. So I said, I've got to move somewhere else that's closer to the station, the radio station, and I wanted to find a place where there was a volunteer fire department. And I moved to Oxon Hill, Maryland, and joined the Oxon Hill Volunteer Fire Department in 1974.
It's in Prince George's County.
Yes, it is.
So you do have background in the fire service.
Absolutely. I spent 6 years as a volunteer firefighter. I continued to work in radio full-time, both doing as a disc, working as a disc jockey, doing some news, doing a little bit of everything, a couple stations. And I went to work as a dispatcher full-time for Prince George's County in 76. And worked part-time in radio, always kept my hands in the media, was in the first cardiac rescue technician class in Prince George's County in 78.
Wow. Was that paramedic back then?
Yeah, that was the first ones. I didn't do it for long once I got the training, but it was good training to have. And then I got out of being an active firefighter in the 80s, but always covered it in my career in radio and TV. I worked for an all-news radio station where my wife currently works, WTOP in Washington, and did some stories, more concentrating on some stories on a D.C. fire department, and then went to work for Channel 9 TV in Washington, which was then WDVM, is now WUSA-TV. We're owned by Gannett, and I've been there 23 years.
Wow.
And I've worked as a reporter who... It's not the only thing I cover, but I covered fire and EMS. And then the blog started from that last year, a year ago, about 12, 14
months ago. Was that your idea?
The interesting thing how this all started, everybody's trying to get into the web, and our webmaster was looking for ideas, and he kept noticing that any time I did a fire story that was on the web, our numbers jumped. And the reason was that Lon over there from firehouse.com would pick it up and run it, and they would give us a spike. And he says, you know, you've got a background in this. Why don't you do something? Why don't you do like either a website or something? I said, well, let's start as a blog. And I kind of noodled around what I'm going to do. And it evolved. We started in May of last year. And if you want to transition to the guy next to me, I'm probably up about 2 or 3 weeks, and I get an email from some guy who says he's the fire geezer. And he had started a month or two, 6 weeks earlier with the same idea, and we've kind of had a symbiotic relationship, would you say, Bill?
Yeah, cool. Well, Bill Shum, you're retired from Fairfax County?
That's right.
Tell us about yourself and your background as well.
Well, I got started, as so many firefighters do, in the volunteer organizations. To give you my bona fides as a geezer, it was 52 years ago.
Holy
that
crow.
I joined as a volunteer fireman.
Hold on, they're blending your lunch. It'll be in
just a I got to wait till I get back to the booth because it's close to the bathrooms there. But I was a volunteer for 12 years before I went to work because when I started, the paid firemen were a very low-paying job, and no matter how much you liked it, it was hard to live off of it. And being young and in my late teens, I wanted to make a fortune like most people do. You want to go out and become really wealthy quick, and that wasn't the route to go. But after about 12 years of it...
Were you a volunteer?
I started out in Alexandria,
okay.
City of Alexandria, which at that time had a large volunteer contingency. It even had house sirens.
Oh, no kidding.
Sort of
wow.
Stuff. Yeah,
okay.
I think they had film back then. After a while, I said, this is crazy. There's nothing I want to do but be a firefighter.
Right.
So I said, the heck with it. The pay was starting to come up a little bit, and it was a little worthwhile. So I finally put in my application and with Fairfax County, which is where I was a volunteer mostly. At.
Okay.
And it was a department in a transition. It was going from all volunteer and starting to put paid people on, and they were hiring their volunteers to do it. It was a good for them because you already knew the system and what was going on.
And that's an interesting transition going from when I was chief in Loudoun County, we were primarily volunteer with a very small core group of career, and it isn't. So you were on the ground floor.
Yeah, I was in kind of the second wave. They had their base core of paid people who came in the early 50s, and then they started hiring again in the late 60s. And it was paying a good whopping $7,000 a year at the time. So I said, well, I can make it with this. And the rest went from there.
Very nice. Now, you retired when?
I retired 16 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And as a side note on that, since we're talking 60 times, man, there. Sometime during this past year, I don't know exactly when, but I hit that magic point where I have earned as much money in retirement as I earned the whole time I was working.
Oh, my goodness.
So I feel good about
it. Wow, very good.
Congratulations.
Now, you retired out of Fairfax County at the rank of?
I was Captain 2.
Captain 2, which is a senior captain?
Yes.
Okay. And the Internet was discovered. You got a computer. Word fire geezer. What was your motivation? Because you cover fire stories, but you cover some real offbeat fire stories. And you covered that fire chief was in Arizona.
Oh, Donna.
Donna, the male fire chief dressed as a woman.
Yeah.
Now, you actually spent a lot more time on there than I'm concerned about that, but that might be another show. You seem really focused on that guy dressed as a woman. But, you know, hey, look, it's 2008. You do what you want. I'll support anything you want to do. But you do find some really cool and interesting stuff. And I mean, you do talk about the serious current events, but you do find some of this other stuff. What were some, I mean, Donna, you want to talk about that for a little bit? Because it really was a fascinating story. I mean, sort of created his, her own fire department, right? It
was... Yeah, that was a strange one. this, what caught my eye was he got arrested. He was trying to start his own fire department without any firemen. He bought himself a rusty old fire engine. This is in Seligman, Arizona, which is one of the little Wild West towns on old U.S. 66, population 500. And Arizona state law is kind of funny in that if a place doesn't have fire coverage, anybody can get a license to run a fire department.
Okay.
Which he did. But I got to be careful what I say because we're being broadcast. Some things I know about him that I shouldn't say
okay.
on the air. But it is known that he's a convicted felon. And he moved to this town and started presenting himself as a woman. And got online and...
So he was starting a diverse fire department, which is very 2008-ish.
Right.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
That's right.
And he wanted to get equipment. He ran... Those of you who are in the watch firehouse.com forums from a few years back, you're probably familiar with this guy because he was running scams and trying to get donations and free equipment and stuff. And it was really a fraudulent activity he was running. And at the same time, he was on eBay trying to buy things without paying for them, and he developed quite a reputation. So in the long run, between the firehouse forums and the eBay forums, there's quite an archives out there, and that's where I got a lot of my information on him.
Okay.
People sent me stuff on there. But what brought him up before the news was he got arrested for harassing the bona fide fire department in Seligman. And they found out then, when they arrested him, that he wasn't who he said he was. He was using a different name and a different, presenting himself as a woman. Then the house of cards started falling down then.
So okay.
I got in and I went through these archives and I put a series of stories on his exchanges and his phony baloney stuff that he was doing. But it was hilarious because he would make things up. You talk about people making things up as
okay,
they go along.
Right, yep.
He'd make up stories on the firehouse forums about their great exploits fighting fires in Seligman. And, how somebody started to comment on, do you use side 1, 2, 3, or 4, A, B, C, and D? And he had this big, long thing about he gets out there with a compass and just tells his fireman what he wants done, and they go out and do it and that sort of thing. I'll take advantage of the moment to tell you, if you get on the website, I had to open up a whole category on him.
Okay.
And it's still active, by the way.
if you're interested.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with it.
Go on FireGeezer. On the right-hand side, there's a section called Categories. And just click on Donna. And I guarantee you, it will be entertaining.
So on the right side of Fire Geezer, click on Donna under Categories, and we can read the rest.
What was interesting, Billy, is that this is a fire captain who really uncovered this story. The local media really didn't pick up on it. And here's a retired fire captain. And as a journalist, I was in awe of what Bill was doing. I watched this.
Yeah.
He investigated this from his armchair in Virginia and really did a heck of a job.
Oh, I saw it, and I followed it. And it's like you got to look around, make sure nobody's watching what you're looking at on the Internet, right? This is interesting stuff. Whoa, man. And it really is. I mean, forget what his lifestyle was.
Yeah.
Just the fraudulence and the pretending to be a fire department and, and asking for funds. And, you know, people are quick to write a check to support fire departments in many cases. And and I guess he ended up with some good stuff. Yeah. But we'll have our listeners check that out. We'll see what your hits look like when you go back. Let's talk about some hot issues. Let's jump to Dave for a minute. Dave, while you do cover the nation, and I feel that firefighterclosecalls.com and you and Bill, we partner along, of course, with Firehouse.com and others, and really do a good job in trying to provide the facts to firefighters and others interested in what we're doing. You focus very strongly on the D.C. area. What are some of the hot issues you've been covering in the D.C. area lately that's really drawn interest at your site?
Well, you talked in general about how a lot of the departments have been in transition, some for a very long time, going from a mostly volunteer force to a career force, and certainly those provide some interesting stories as time goes on. I'm interested in all kinds of news. Now, I do link to a lot of things around the country, but basically as a reporter, I concentrate on the Washington area and try to uncover interesting stories. Now, the one that has been the most controversial of late is the Kentland Volunteer Fire Department, at one time claiming to be the busiest fire department in the nation. And they had some videos that some of you may be familiar with that came out recently that were 4 years old that showed something that didn't shock me in the least. As I've often pointed out, if they'd had cameras and internet, you know, video cameras and internet back when I was a firefighter, they would have seen that a lot worse. But they, one of them that shocked the public was a firefighter shooting a fireworks from his butt. Let's be honest. And it,
your headline was that drew my attention. Firefighter, what was it? Firefighter. Firefighter turned fireworks launching pad. Yeah. I thought that was a very appropriate title, and certainly it drew my interest.
Well, since we're not over the air, I'll give you the headline that they wouldn't let me use in my piece. But can I use that one? I was going to call it Flaming Asshole, but that was just me.
Now, the firefighter involved is actually quite a firefighter.
He's written a book about his days at Kentland. Yeah. That was the one person involved. There were a lot of people involved.
Right.
And
right.
It was a really difficult one for me because I know what I saw on there. While some people are shocked and say it shouldn't be in this day and age, we know what's happened in firehouses across the country. If you're not familiar, there was a hazing incident on there where they got some guy sometimes naked out in front of the firehouse ramp, hitting him with a fire extinguisher and a fire hose. And it was 4 years old. And the dilemma, even just putting it on TV, was when is it too old? Already another station had run it. The deciding point for me in running it is that the fire chief of Prince George's County made it clear that this was disturbing and unprofessional and that he was going to eventually take action on it. So it made it news. And then we linked to it, and it picked up. Firehouse.com picked it up. Other sites picked it up. And it has probably been one of the more controversial ones, brought more comments in than anything in the last couple of weeks. But those, I just don't try to do those type of stories. I'm always looking for something that not just would be of interest to me, but interest to firefighters out there, and think about what is interesting to them.
You know, I followed some of that, and I get a kick out of us as firefighters, and you certainly being part of the family as a longtime firefighter. We get so angry at a reporter for reporting on what we did. Maybe if we didn't did it, there wouldn't be nothing to write about.
And I'll point out, I didn't take the pictures, and I didn't shoot any fireworks out my butt.
But I ran into, at Stattered, I said, he didn't do anything. It was chosen to do this, and somebody decided to write about it. You know, don't release your video next time, or whatever, or don't do that. But you guys both stirred up pretty good. And we'll stay with Dave for a minute. And you get some love letters from time to time. And you sometimes seem to almost enjoy putting yourself in that. Not from a nasty standpoint, but hey, here's the facts. And if you want to take me on, take me on. And you really do that.
I do it for a couple of reasons. One, I'm a reporter. I'm not a firefighter anymore. It's my job to tell the news, and we should be accountable to the public like anybody else is. All I ask for the people to write in and I challenge them with is just, I've heard in the same week, you're anti-volunteer, and the next letter says I'm anti-career, you know? And I don't just do negative stories. Those are the ones that people remember,
sure.
I think. But My focus is on getting the news out. And the way I answer them is, look, give me the facts of where you see that going on. Usually when I challenge them, they back down. They don't have the facts that are there. I just did a nice profile, I thought was a very nice profile,
Chief
on
Waltz.
Larry Waltz,
yeah,
who
Chief
was the
Waltz.
First chief of Prince George's County,
right.
A man I knew and had a great deal of affection for. Mainly got to know him afterwards, even though he was chief for a year when I was a volunteer. I got to know him later in life. And I really had a great deal of respect for him. The new fireboat in Prince George's County was not just named after the Lawrence Waltz. And I went through my archives of what I call the Statter archives, my old scrapbooks, and found some articles and kind of gave a background on who Larry Waltz was, because a lot of people these days have no clue who he is. He was the first career fire chief in Prince George's County at a very interesting transition time, going from an all-volunteer force, basically, to the career people starting to be in charge, so to speak.
You know, you and I were talking at dinner last night about that, and Bill, you certainly understand this. When I was in Loudoun, we were going through that transition, and I used to like it. I've to this day, I've said that was the toughest job I ever had. And doing that, dealing with fire rescue commissions and volunteer associations and career, the whole thing, it's challenging. And I remember feeling most days like I had a stick on each limb and I was balancing plates like the guy in a circus, trying to keep it balanced. And Chief Walls went through that very much. What was the quote he used as what it was like to be fire chief in Prince George's County at that time?
He said it was trying to make a snowball out of a handful of Jell-O,
yeah.
Is what he described, balancing the two. And he was stuck in the middle, and well-respected on both sides. But I thought it was interesting to show historically what Prince George's County had been through Larry Waltz's eyes and some articles I had and some of my recollections. And there was a big fire that I was on in 1975 on Palmer Road in Oxon Hill, 922 Palmer Road, Garden Department fire that everybody thought was mismanaged. There was a big report done, and it may have had to do with Larry Waltz retiring. I included that in there because it was the fire that prompted standards for volunteer firefighters in Prince George's County. Within a couple months, the standards came through the county council. Because I put that in there, somebody thought that I was being negative about the volunteers, but this was history. It was not me. I wasn't really happy that a fire I was on was looked at in that way. I'd only been there, I guess, less than a year, but it was mismanaged, and there were a lot of problems. And it was fueled by the battle on the career and between the career and volunteers, but certainly it was part of the history. But sometimes when you even just put down the historical context of it, it becomes controversial.
Hey, you're walking on this hotbed all the time, and it should be noted, you know, for those of you who are listening, I'm sure you'll get a good following on this show from those who follow what you guys do, that many departments are quick to point out and firefighters are quick to point out all the problems in PG, but to my knowledge, it is around the country, when you look at volunteer fire departments, it is one of the more standardized departments. And you cannot ride without firefighter certification. You cannot ride without being an EMT. I mean, they have issues, but you know, sometimes the busier you are, the more opportunity for issues and stuff.
Absolutely. I have a great deal of respect for the firefighters of Prince George's County, career volunteer, and all over, for that matter. But you're absolutely right. There are a lot of things that they do in Prince George's County that is well ahead of what is being done in
Absolutely.
Other places in the country.
Bill, let me talk to you about the Fire Geyser site for a minute. My mom is 81, and my mom is on the Internet. She text messages my kids. They know their grandma's IMing and all that kind of, and it's wonderful. And you're a senior guy. I was talking to somebody yesterday, and I said, man, I feel like I'm getting old. I had a grandchild this week. He says, you're not getting old, you're gaining seniority, which fits better in the firehouse, so I'm gaining seniority. And you retired 16 years ago, so as a senior guy, what got you interested in the Internet, and why the website Fire Geyser? Where'd that come from?
Well, I got on the Internet in 97. It was when the Windows revolution came out. It made it easier and to go ahead and get online, and I kind of grew with it. And it was a few years ago I had learned what blogs were, and I found them fascinating, and I'd read a few blogs every day. And
was I right in my definition of what a blog is when we started?
I mean it's kind of a gray thing, but basically it's a website that somebody posts things in a timely manner.
Kind of like a diary type of a thing.
Yeah, but that's where the word log came from. It's like a diary.
But okay.
I think one of the key points is it has to be almost daily to meet the definition.
Okay.
Or
okay.
regularly.
Okay.
And so on. And I just got fascinated with it and watching the way they develop and the way news is passed around, or information, I should say.
Right.
And we're truly undergoing an information revolution in the world right now, this electronic. I mean, you don't see it when you're up close like this, but you step back and look at it, and there is a tremendous change growing in how information is exchanged.
It's crazy.
On that. And I just thought, well, this would be fun to get involved with. Maybe I'll start a blog. And it made sense to me, if you're going to talk about something every day, you've got to talk about something you know about. I'm not really an expert in anything, but I do know the fire business.
Right.
And I said, well, what do I do to make myself different in that field? There's no point in doing the same thing Firehouse.com does. They've got a big staff of people gathering news. I'd be wasting my time trying to be a news source.
Right.
So I reverted back to what I did when I was at work. I call the website the Digital Day Room. And when you go in the day room, take a break in the morning there, what do you talk about? Oh, about 70-80% fire and rescue stuff. And
yeah, what's up?
The rest of the time, things that everybody in the room is interested in. Guys are usually interested in hunting and fishing or beer or things of that sort. So I said, well, I'll put together what I'm interested in, because that's the only way you can be interesting, is be interested in yourself in the first place. And that's how it evolved. I try to cover... There's no point in covering the local news, because that's well covered. And I wanted to I didn't want to be known as just a Washington area site. I expanded out right from the start. And I cover things that are going on worldwide, having to do with fire and rescue stuff. A few months ago, I even had covered a fire in the Antarctica. And not many people got that one. So that sort of thing. And it's a entertaining hobby for me, and as long as I'm interested in it, I'm having a ball with it. So
that's very cool. Yeah, the Digital Day Room, right? Go in and just kind of catch up on what's going on. What, other than the Donna story, what other stories that you've written about has generated most of the correspondence and activity and buzz?
Well, I don't get a whole lot of response from it, because something that has been a trend that's been going along lately that I've been watching and reporting on has been overseas. I'd like to point out that primarily in Australia and Great Britain, they're having a real crisis with their ambulance services over there. They have, they're pretty well identical in the way they set up national health care systems, except in Australia, they're done on a state-by-state basis, and in the UK it's a nationwide thing. But they are having a real problem getting ambulances to the people and getting people treated at the hospital through this one grand national health service that they're operating. And you've got situations in Great Britain where it is not at all unusual for somebody to wait 45 minutes or even 2 hours for an ambulance. And
that's unbelievable.
I reported on one case where the ambulance showed up more than 24 hours after the people had called for it. And by then, they put the poor man in a car and taken him to the hospital where he died. So it's, you know, there. It has a lot to do with big government running things.
Your timing is interesting, though.
Yeah.
Not that only because I'm choking to death, but your timing is interesting with a presidential election coming up, and health care will be an issue, always is. And by providing that side of what's going on over there, I mean, people think we need a national health care program here. If it mimics something like you're describing, we may be in big trouble.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you don't have to look far either. They're doing the same thing in Canada. Again, they have a national health service in Canada, and but you know, you don't have to look too far on there. In Australia, one of the states down there, I believe it was Queensland, they're trying to take action down there to get it squared away. They put a lady in charge of the health service, the state health service, and she cleaned house and put about 1/3 of the desk jockeys back in the field.
So was this government getting bigger and more people wanting to be in charge, and the typical
hierarchy
stuff.
Growth,
yeah.
Empire building within a government
yeah,
agency.
Yeah, right,
you see how it goes. But
that's interesting.
That's one of the things that I've been, one of the trends I've been following.
Dave, other than the PG news that you cover, Prince George's County, gorgeous Prince George's, don't call it PG, I remember that, somebody told me that. What else has generated some interest? And you know, what happened in Kentland or anywhere else, you know, that's interesting, but it isn't the center of the world.
No, it isn't.
It's generally a good fire company providing good service and good firefighters.
Absolutely. And I know a lot of people there and have a great deal of respect for them. But it is interesting, though, when you do write about Kentland, the numbers go
the
up.
Interest
it's from
is
all
that?
Over. That is interesting. They've, yeah. they've marketed them themselves in a way through the years, having to hit the, you know, the run totals they had and getting the publicity from it. People are interested in it. But there are a lot of other things we covered. Actually, one of the things I'm most proud of, it was last year we did for the first time the first live streaming from the Fallen Firefighters.
Yes, you did, right? You were live.
With Firehouse.com, we partnered. We're up there. I'm up there every year doing the uplink with my wife, Hillary Howard. We took over from the late Rich Adams in doing that, and that's something I'm most proud of. We've had other stories that have generated a lot of comments. One was a fire in Fairfax County in Lorton, and I believe May of last year, where a woman died, and there were a lot of questions about the actions of the fire department. It created a report there and had the fire chief saying that we should have found this woman in time, which was very unusual at the time.
What was the, can you summarize exactly? I remember the fire, and I remember there was quite a bit of criticism that the crews did not find the fire, find the victim, and the chief did make that comment. Where'd that end up? And what, for those who are not familiar with this, give them a little summary and give them a conclusion.
It was
happened.
A fire just after midnight, I think, or 1 o'clock in the morning in Lorton. It was a townhouse that I'll call a back-to-back townhouse, not piggyback, but there was only egress on side A on the ground floor door or windows on the second and third floor. Very small townhouse, not very big. She was in a third floor on the third floor. Did not feel she could make it down the steps or to the windows. Was talking to 911. Went into the bathroom. Where she waited to be rescued. They told her people were on the way. That information was relayed. It wasn't a great deal of fire if you look at the aftermath, which I went down to cover, not knowing there were any difficulties when I went down to cover it as a TV reporter. But I started to put things together saying, well, there's not a lot of damage here. There's vinyl siding on the outside of here that didn't even melt. A little bit of smoke that you could see, a little bit of evidence that there had been smoke on the outside. What I could see in the inside and the debris out there, this was not a very big fire. She's on the third floor, and the other piece of information I learned, they didn't work her. So what was going on? When I found out she was on talking to 911 when the firefighters arrived, I said, something's not making sense here. So we started to investigate a little further, and we found out, yes, you're correct. She was on the phone. We relayed that information. And for some reason, not only did they not find her right away, she wasn't found for about 45 minutes on that top floor. I have to tell you, once I put all this together, it was one of the most difficult stories, whether for TV or the blog, that I had to make the decision whether we run or not. It was really, I felt like I was second-guessing. There was only one other story I can relate to that was quite like it. This was clearly firefighters trying to do their job. There was no indication anybody shirked their duties or anything like that. It just didn't get done for a variety of reasons. But when the acting fire chief at the time, Dave Rohr, said to me, we should have found her, very clearly, we should have found her, and I want to know why we didn't, I knew that was a story, and we went with it. I felt much better about going with it. So they came up with a report and said that, you know, people probably didn't do the job the best way they could on the first arriving companies. The information was there for them to act on, and it wasn't acted on properly. And this was a fairly large woman in a fairly small area.
A couple of years ago, many years ago, actually, one of my responsibilities was overseeing a 911 dispatch center. And we had a dispatcher take a call for a drowned child, didn't process it, and continued taking other calls. Sometimes there's a blip. And that's what I thought about when I heard the Fairfax thing. Are we so concerned about firefighters today being certified in so many things, having to do so many jobs, that when the primary job that we were created to do happens, so much else applies? And I'm not anti-NIMS or any of that stuff, but there's so much that the basics got lost. And one of the first departments in the nation to realize we were losing the basics was FDNY. I think it was in the mid-'80s when they said, wait a minute, hazmat, first responder. Whoa, we're forgetting, we're having problems with fires. Stretching the initial hand line, doing a basic search. Did that come into play?
Oh, absolutely. The 3/4 of the comments I got were from either retired or current people. It appeared to me, at least they said that, they're anonymous, from Fairfax County, and they were saying, we need to get back to the basics here. We have lost sight. We are a world-renowned department who has an enormous amount of money and resources, and maybe we're not fighting fires the way we should. And that was the reaction I got. And I have to tell you, even though I felt pretty bad about doing the story, and I had a really bad feeling about doing it, everybody was great to me afterwards. I mean, very few people were upset with me for doing the story. They said it needed to be done.
So you write a story about firefighters that unfortunately failed to make a rescue, and you're getting support. You write a story about a guy put a firecracker in his ass, and you have got all kinds of trouble.
That's basically, you summed my life up very well, Billy Goldfeder.
That's wonderful, wonderful.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
We are here with a group of firefighters, police officers, EMTs, paramedics, nurses, and their families to talk about firstresponders.com, the website devoted to the financial life of first responders. Excuse me, what's your name? Okay, Jim, tell me, what do you like best about firstresponders.com? Is it the credit card that tells everybody you're a first responder, or their competitive mortgage rates? Oh, it's the Responder Rewards Program. Exclusive discounts you and your family get from hundreds of retail outlets, from home improvement to electronics to clothing. Up to 40% off. Great. Is this your little doggy? Hey, buddy. Everybody seems to love the benefits of firstresponders.com. Right, everybody?
You speak your own language, we speak it too. That's because firstresponders.com was created by first responders. With benefits like great mortgage products, discounts at retailers, and the First Responders credit card. It's not just a credit card, it's a badge. Firstresponders.com, giving back to the people who give.
What should firefighters be concerned about? And I'll go to Bill first and then to Dave with the upcoming election. And we're only starting to stir the issues between Barack Obama and John McCain, and there clearly are some differences. You talk to some firefighters in Illinois, they say that Barack is the best thing since sliced bread. You talk to others, and they say that we're not sure what he stands for. He certainly is providing hope, and I see Senator McCain providing change, but a little bit more of what we're used to, where I think Barack would be a lot of change. So let's refocus now specifically from a firefighter standpoint. All I know that I can talk about, and this isn't campaigning here, but all I know is that we do know that Senator McCain has our history of supporting the fire service. I'm interested to learn what Barack Obama has done. I've emailed him twice. He hasn't written back yet. I'm expecting to get him on the show soon. We'll see how that works out. We actually did have an opportunity to interview Senator McCain, and it got passed on, and we're waiting for that opportunity to come up again. Seriously, on this show through the smoke, they offered one of their staffers, and you know what? I don't want to talk to a staffer, but if he'd like to talk, we want to take advantage of that. But for your guys' opinions and your standpoint, what should firefighters be concerned about? Let's just say they had an opportunity to talk to one of these two gentlemen running for president. Bill, what do you think?
Well, it's been my observation that no matter what party you're talking, you know, the candidate you're talking to, you get a lot of promises from them, but when it gets right down to the nitty-gritty, up in the national level, firefighters get the short end of the stick on this stuff all the time there. And it's exhibited when you look at whoever the president is. They make these appointments to the man who heads up FEMA. It's always a political payoff to somebody who helped raise a lot of money for that candidate when he was running. And the people that they have up there, they don't know the viewpoint of the firefighters and what they need, and they don't take it all that seriously. One of the threads that we've been running recently, and I've been getting a lot of feedback from people on, is with this economic crisis, or they're calling it an economic crisis, but there is definitely a pinch in budgets right now. This practice of municipalities slashing fire department budgets in order to stay afloat. And I've been preaching to the people who read my column there about how you have to get out and stay up in front of your citizens, the people who vote for these people who are doing this, because I feel what is going on here is that they are, is a two-faceted thing. They are trying to preserve a lot of nice-to-have government programs that gets them votes.
Sure, the pretty parks.
And they at the expense of the fire department. And in some cases, I believe they use that as a club, too, to publicly say, my God, we've got to close firehouses, and use that as a extortion over the citizens to raise taxes, which is what they're always after all the time, in my opinion, anyway. So you get this situation. There have been a lot of reports going around lately of fire departments getting budget slashes and stations closing, people laid off. But overall, most places aren't doing that. It's a matter of how well run they are. And it's important that the firefighters, both volunteer and career people, stay in touch with their citizens and let them know what they're doing and why they need to do it, and keep the pressure on the politicians.
From the citizens
that,
doing that,
that end,
right? gaining that support from the citizens and bringing
right.
them in. That's I'm a big follower of the issues of layoffs, and if you read the secret list, I've been pushing the issues real hard with the layoffs and with the cutbacks. And Denver, Colorado wanted to cut back on fuel, so they've reduced their alarm assignments to save fuel. But yet, a week later, they assigned fire companies to go out and pump city park ponds to move the algae out of the way, flowing pumpers at full capacity, burning up fuel. And that's the kind of crazy government stuff you talk about. For the departments that are looking at the layoffs and the cutbacks, the fire chief, which is a tough job, because once you become the chief, you really, in many cases, are now part of the city hall staff. You're really not the fire department anymore. You're almost like a liaison position. And the chiefs, some chiefs, and in some cases many chiefs, have failed when the budgets are cut and things are reduced to make it clear what will and what won't happen. If you cut us down from four-person companies to three-person companies, this is now what we'll be able to do and what we can't do. So your comment to our listeners to get involved and make sure their departments are educating, or their unions or their volunteer associations are partnering and educating with the public, will then help solve the problem from the back end.
That's the only pressure the politicians feel is from the voters.
That's right,
They don't listen to the firemen. I mean, they'll glad hand you and they drop
sure.
by once in a while for the photo op. But the only people they really listen to are the ones that vote for them.
I think also what I can, Dave, we'll go to you on the same discussion in a second, but what also made me think just now when you were talking is who is going to be your FEMA or DHS director, Mr. McCain or Mr. Obama? Those would be good questions in the next few weeks, as opposed to waiting. He gets elected and then they pick who they want. And I'm telling you, FEMA...
I'll bet they won't tell you.
Well, that's the issue. FEMA and USFA, which are filled with some very good people, especially USFA, are a little cubicle in the basement of a building. They just don't matter the way they should. Dave, some thoughts?
Well, first of all, if I give my opinion on the election, I'm going to be your assistant here on Through the Smoke because they're going to fire me. So I am a TV reporter, so I have to be careful.
Don't touch that.
Exactly.
One.
So,
what's that pin you're wearing on your shirt?
Yeah, thank you very much, Bill. But generally speaking, I probably agree with Bill when we get down to the local politics, but you're absolutely right. When you get down to FEMA, USFA, those have a great deal of effect. Certainly we get to the training and some of the resources that are available to fire and EMS throughout the country. But my advice in general sometimes for firefighters would be get beyond the emotion of it. It's not just who can wave the flag best in front of the firefighters. It's who, as you say, ask them who is going to be their FEMA director, who is going to be the head of the USFA. Those are very important issues. Sometimes I think firefighters are just too emotional. Who can stand there in front of them and say, we support you, but do you really support us? Do you know the issues? And I think that's important for firefighters to ask those questions about of the people that they vote for, whether it's on the local level, the state level, the national level. I think that's very important.
Good advice. Well, look, it's been a pleasure. We only have a limited amount of time here. I want to give each of you just a couple minutes to provide any thoughts, comments, or advice for those listening. Maybe even answer either how your blogs has changed what you think about us, or why should firefighters go to your blogs?
Want me to go first? Or go ahead, Bill. You're a senior guy.
That means I get to point who goes first. No, really, the reason I think people would enjoy reading my blog is because it brings in things that you wouldn't normally learn about. Part of what I was mentioning before, this information revolution that's going on. Up before a couple of years ago, you couldn't open up your newspaper or magazine and find out what's going on in the world as far as fire and rescue. You got the monthly magazines, Fire Chief and Fire Engineering and so on, but that was
Firehouse,
yeah.
Yeah.
That was kind of dated news. And it was, by their very nature, it wasn't timely.
It really is. You know, what you read about in whatever the magazine you get, it was on the internet the day it happened. So that's very true.
Well, yeah, and now that's what's happening now. Now people can go to sites like mine and Dave's. Even though Dave is centered on locality, he covers a wide variety of things going on elsewhere. And I try to bring in the other things. And
you're
now
sort of
you
like
have a place, namely the internet, where you can sit down for a half hour or so and clicking through the selected sites that you enjoy most, you're bringing in a world of information every single day of what's going on. Anybody here would have heard about that fire in Antarctica a couple months ago?
Exactly.
I even had pictures of it. And now with the home video revolution, we're even getting videos on the stories. So that's where it's. That's why people should read the blogs. And when they come across mine, a lot of people. I have a quirky way of doing things, and I got a email from a fellow one time. He had worked for me a little over 20 years ago, and I had never seen him. He went to work, transferred to another part of the county. After I retired, I never had any contact with him since then. He sent me an email telling me that he reads the website every day because it's just like going to work with me again every day.
That's what a great compliment.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. So then he finds himself out waxing poles and things. I looked at your site and have looked at it for a while, and it's not Mad Magazine. It's not National Lampoon. It's kind of like Esquire. It really kind of is. There's very timely information, but there's some off-the-beaten-track stuff and maybe even some fishing and hunting.
A fellow told me yesterday, he stopped by the booth, he said he likes it for that reason. He commented he really enjoyed the article I had about the meteorite that hit Siberia back 100 years ago.
Because he needed to know that. But it's
tied in. It's tied in because it did a huge forest fire.
Yeah, exactly.
It burned out a tremendous area and killed, just wiped out homes and killed people, and nobody ever knew about it until 50 years later. It was in, Siberia. Information doesn't travel in that part of the
right.
world.
Right, of course. And thanks to Fire Geezer, they now have that information.
Don't tell me you're going to say my site's like Penthouse. Is that what you're going to say? With the guy shooting the fireworks.
It's more like a Playgirl if it's a guy shooting fireworks at his butt. Dave, how about some final comments as well?
First of all, the site I like the most, besides firehouse.com and Firefighter Close Calls, which I have to say, is Fire Geezer. He does a really good job. I mean, from a journalistic standpoint, I admire Bill, and I always look and say, I wish I had that story. Yesterday, we were standing in the booth on the exhibit floor, and I'm talking to people, and Bill's back there blogging about a stolen fire engine in Connecticut, and I'm saying, this is why you got me down here in your booth. So you can scoop me on this story. So he does a really good job, and I enjoy doing this. I do a lot of it in my own time. because I like asking the questions, too. It's not so much my opinion. I try to ask the questions. You brought up the Denver issue. The question I would ask in Denver was when the PIO came out and said, well, we really don't need all those fire trucks responding to the call. So I say, well, aren't you the same people that justified having all those fire trucks? Don't you have to do this, this, and this?
Drinking that City Hall Kool-Aid.
Yeah, and I want to ask those questions, and that's what. And I love asking questions. Why do you do things? Why are you doing it this way? I put one on this week, which was near and dear to my heart, that has created a lot of comments on my site about the Chicago Fire Department ambulance, and the video is very one-sided. It only shows one view. But the point was, when do you confront the press? Do you go in there and tell them to shut their cameras down? How do you do it? And I asked the question, what is your policy? What do you think is behind you as far as law on doing this? And from my knowledge, there isn't anything. But I love to ask the questions. I love to hear the comments. I love to write back and forth to people. Not that I have the answers. I just love to hear what everybody else out there has to say and give me other views of what we're seeing in the news from fire and EMS.
You know, I would say a significant part of your success, both of your blogs, is that your information is accurate. If it isn't right, you comment and make it right. And you're not just making stuff up. And there's a couple sites out there, very disappointing. And they're slowly, fading away. Because firefighters can figure it out eventually that when someone's full of it and when they're not. But your sites have really provided a service. I think the digital day room is a great way to describe your site, Bill. And it is a comfortable place to go and catch up on what's in the mainstream and what's definitely not in the mainstream, such as Siberia. We have an obligation to know what's going on there once in a while as well. And I commented on the fire magazines, and clearly, whether it be Firehouse, Fire Engineering, Fire Chief, Fire Rescue magazine, those magazines provide a very important service and provide you with print material that's up to date related to training and current events. And they're not, I don't think any, and I know all the editors, they're not trying to compete with the internet. But definitely today, the internet provides us with rapid information. It may be accurate, it may not be accurate, but the internet's out there. And you two have set the example of providing good, solid, backed up, no nonsense, no BS information. If they read it, it's pretty well researched and factual. And I, for one, certainly appreciate it. You're listening to Through the Smoke on Firehouse.com. We're live in Baltimore at the 25th anniversary of Firehouse Expo. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. My guests in this episode of Through the Smoke have been Dave Statter from Statter 911, www.statter, S-T-A-T-T-E-R, 911.com, and Bill Shum, retired captain from Fairfax County, Virginia, who runs www.firegeezer.com. And we've had a great opportunity to just hear a little perspective. I just thought, instead of, normally I'm covering some pretty serious stuff, firefighter line of duty deaths and critical things like that. I thought today would be an interesting day to spend talking to two of you who blog about these type of incidents as well as off the beaten path stuff. So thanks for your time being with us today.
Thank you, Billy.
Thanks very much.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned to Firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.